This is a BBC podcast. You can get all our podcasts and our terms of use at bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
You are listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Rustam Qabel, and for this week's assignment, I'm in Tahor province in northern Afghanistan. Very few foreign journalists ever come up to this place on the border with Tajikistan. It's a long drive from the nearest big city, Mazar-i-Sharif, and the roads are not well made. There are also some well-known trouble spots where people are pulled over and robbed. I'm here to report on the men with guns, the warlords who run this region. Because although there have been many elections in Afghanistan since the fall of the Taliban in 2001, it is still the Kalashnikov that rules, not the ballot box. High in the mountains, Tahar is also stunningly beautiful, with fast rivers and lush green rice fields. The rivers provide irrigation for the crops, and not only that. There are also lots of small hydroelectric stations like this one in this part of Afghanistan. This is the village of Ganjalibik, just outside Talokan, the provincial capital. The owners have dug a canal to divert water from the river and installed a hydropower generator to produce electricity. In the absence of a national electricity grid, it seems like a good idea. But this one is a disaster for most of the people who live in villages around here. You can hear just how dry the soil is here. It's not more than half an hour from the green rice paddies of Talokan, but the fields here seem lifeless and yellow. Farming is the main source of income for many people in Tahor province, the region situated close to the biggest river in Central Asia. But now, despite being so close to the river, many farms don't have water for their crops. The reason the farmers don't have water is that it has been diverted by the power station upstream and others like it. The people who work in the fields here, people like Muhammad Sharif, are really struggling.
Muhammad Sharif says a powerful man built a dam on the upstream about 10 years ago, and since they didn't have enough water and their crops have been failing ever since, and they don't know what to do because when they went to the local officials, they couldn't do anything against him. Muhammad Sharif said they couldn't go to meet that commander because they're too scared of him, and they are poor people and they don't think that person would listen to them, and they're very scared that he may take revenge on them. He says he's a poor farmer. He's not a farmer, actually. He's a poor man who works for farmers who have land. But since those farmers can't find water and their crops are failing, it's affecting his livelihood, his life, too. He says he's struggling to feed his two children, and they don't even have drinking water. They have to bring muddy water from the river and keep it for a while and boil it and drink it.
I'm standing by the banks of Khujaighor River. It's so small, I wouldn't call it a river. You know, I can jump over it. The riverbed is empty. I've been told that the livelihoods of around 100,000 people depend on this river. And according to the people I've been talking to, the man who built the dam that has deprived them of their water is called Aghagul Qatagani. Aghagul is feared around here. He's a former Mujahideen commander who fought against both the Soviets and the Taliban. Today, he's the mayor of Talokan, the capital of this province, Tahar. The mayor's office is in one of the very few modern buildings in the city. Agagul is a strong-looking man in his early 60s. His beard is trimmed, and he wears a grey western jacket over his shalwar kameez. He doesn't look like the Mujahideen commander I had imagined.
Commanders in Tahar don't break the law. They help the government to enforce the law here. Any security that's been achieved in Tahar is thanks to the Mujahideen commanders. The government has a presence only in the city, so in rural areas, it's the commanders who have established law and order.
When I talk to some people, they say they don't have water because some officials and powerful people built hydropower dams on the rivers and they don't have water. Is it true? Do you think these people were telling me the truth?
That's a lie. This is not a big problem in Tahar. It's a small issue. People do build hydroelectric stations to produce power. Ordinary people. Some of them are shopkeepers, ordinary workers, and they build these dams to bring in additional income. They're not commanders.
But is it true that Agagul himself has built a dam?
This is not true. If anyone told you that I have a dam, show me that person. I'm ready to take him to court. There is one dam over here, and that does belong to the government. It's not mine.
Despite Agagul's denials, other officials confirm what the villagers say, that Agagul built a dam on the river to supply his own private power station with water. Najibullah Khalikhyar, for example, who is the head of the Provincial Council of Tahar, one of the few elected officials here.
Najibullah, I met some people in Hujairgarh district. They complained about water shortage, and they say because some powerful men, commanders, built hydropower dams and deprived them of water. Is it true?
What you are saying is 100% true. If you went out to the districts, you may well have seen people without water. And that's because powerful men have built private hydroelectric dams, and they do deprive people of water. I can confirm this 100%.
But I want to know specifically if Agagul has built a dam.
It's true that Agagul owns a dam. Other powerful people do also, but when the farmers complain, the commanders threaten them.
I don't understand one thing. Why no one can tell him destroy his dam? Why no one can make him obey the law?
The government is weak. The governor is weak. And other government institutions are scared of him. He has powerful protectors in high positions. It's quite clear that he has protectors, and his dams are causing water shortages. There are other tragedies and problems here caused by him and other people like him.
The more people you talk to in northern Afghanistan, the more you realize how weak the law is. There may be people with official titles, like mayor or deputy governor, but those titles alone don't carry much power or authority. The people who have power are the ones who have armed men under them. They may also occupy an official position, but it's the weapons that matter. There is no rule of law, a weak judicial system, and scores of illegal armed groups. And many ordinary Afghans live in daily fear of these armed men. This is another small town in Tahar province. It seems quite peaceful and not different from other Afghan towns. Dusty roads, busy markets, and shops open round the clock. But the taxes that are collected from these businesses are not collected by the government, but instead by local commanders, the men with guns. Here, I'm meeting a man who doesn't want to reveal his identity. He doesn't even want to be seen with me on the street. So we've arranged to meet indoors, in the back room of his friend's shop.
Would you tell us your story, please? What happened to you and your family?
What this man tells me is that four of his brothers were forcibly recruited by a local commander to fight the Taliban. All four of them were killed. He says the same commander has been trying to recruit him too, but he's refused. And he says ever since, the commander's men have been threatening him and his family. They have told him to leave his house, leave his land, and move somewhere else. And they have beaten him up. But he says he can't leave this place because he has no other way of feeding his large family. He says he's too scared to go to the police because he's sure they have connections with that commander and his man.
U komandorlarning silohlari bormi?
So I'm interviewing him in the back of the shop, of his friend's shop, and someone entered the shop, I think a regular customer, but he was so scared, he stopped talking and he looked at the door because he's too scared.
The Mujahideen commanders have always been powerful in this part of Afghanistan. It's a badge of honor if you're part of the Mujahideen who fought against the Soviet invaders in the 1980s. The people here are mainly from the Uzbek or Tajik communities and generally do not support the Pashtun-dominated Taliban. So former commanders are still in charge here. I wanted to talk to the governor of Tahar, himself a Mujahideen commander, but he's out of the country at the moment. So I am meeting his deputy, a Western-educated man in his early 30s. Unlike most officials here, he is not a former commander and he speaks very good English.
Thank you. I am so happy to see you, a special BBC and Talcon. I am Farid Zaki, the deputy governor. I am now acting as a governor of Tahar province.
Farid Zaki is part of the official government structure of Afghanistan. But my impression is that it's armed commanders who really make decisions here.
I'm sure I can say that there is a lot of commander. You see, the Tahar province is one of provinces during the Taliban. It was the hostel of all commanders, all Afghan peoples who fought against the Taliban. And this is true, we have commanders. And I cannot tell you that who is more powerful here, but I am sure the government of Afghanistan, now they are controlling everything here, the rule of law is fine, and the human rights has been protected here in Tahar. And let me say, the commander that is in Tahar, most of them are now helpful with us. They are coordinating too much things with us, and always they are coming. You see, we have a lot of local meeting.
But I met many people in remote districts of Tahar who told me that their lands were grabbed by powerful commanders, and sometimes they were deprived of water. They built some dams and didn't block the waterways.
The problem of land exists all around Afghanistan, not just in Tahar. According to our information, there is dispute exists between the people, between the commanders, between the all peoples, common peoples here. But what is a fact is that we're trying to solve all this problem. Let me see one thing. Nobody can build hydropower if they don't have a permission from our line department. So we will give a permission for them. After we are sending our delegation from line department, they are going there and they are writing their comment to us, their report. If they saw that they can block the water or it will be make a problem or there will be shortage of the water, so we will not give a permission.
That may be the official view, but it doesn't match the reality that I've come across over the last few days. Most commanders are reluctant to talk to journalists, but one man has agreed to show me his weapons.
His village is situated very close to the Afghan-Tajik border, and the roads are not safe. We have to travel early in the morning in order to be back by sunset. There are many armed groups, robbers and insurgents on these roads, so it's going to be a long and uncomfortable journey.
We are approaching Khuja Bahauddin district of Sakhon province. Roads here are very bumpy. They have never been asphalted. So this is one of the unreachable places of Afghanistan. No wonder why both Soviets and Taliban struggled to get hold of this part of Afghanistan.
This is a bit like a military museum. This anti-aircraft gun must be at least 30 years old. It's got a Soviet star stamped into the metal. It's mounted on the back of a truck, and as you wind the handle, the barrels rise slowly to point up into the air. It belongs to Malik Tatar, a Mujahideen commander who is very proud of having fought against the Taliban in the 1990s. And he tells me that he still has about 100 men under his command.
I've killed people. I've fought against the Taliban, so if I gave up my weapons, they'd kill me. I've killed a lot of Taliban and taken a lot of prisoners, so I have a lot of enemies.
On what condition you may give up your weapons, you may lay down your weapons?
If we had 100% security and people felt 100% safe, if we got rid of the thieves, the robbers and all the enemies, then we wouldn't need any weapons. We have drug smugglers here too. If the government could provide security, then we wouldn't need weapons.
But some people say that commanders, armed commanders, they harm ordinary Afghans. They grab their lands, they assault them. What about you? I mean, what's your relationship with your people, with ordinary Afghans here?
I've never harmed ordinary people. But you're right. There are commanders who've stolen land, who've killed ordinary people, or who've forced young women to marry them. There are many commanders in this country like that, but I'm not one of them. I don't do things like that.
I'm back in Kabul from Tahor. My impression there is many people live in fear of armed groups, commanders, and powerful men. They extort money, they grab their lands, and they intimidate the whole communities. So I want to know, is it unusual, is it specific to Tahor, or the situation is same all across Afghanistan? I'm on my way to Human Rights Watch to meet Heather Barr, who works for this organization in Kabul, because they've written a report on this very subject.
Well, unfortunately, what you're describing is not particular to that region. It's a common phenomenon across Afghanistan. I mean, Afghanistan has really been without strong central government control for a very long time, and this has led to the sort of rising of local strongmen who control localities. And one of the things that's particularly disheartening is that 2001 not only didn't change this, but in many ways strengthened these people, because the Karzai administration, with encouragement from its international partners, including the U.S., specifically went out and made friends with these strongmen, believing that that was going to be in their best interest in terms of security.
But are they going to leave Afghanistan to these people if once they withdraw?
Well, they already have left Afghanistan to these people, but it's certainly true that as the international military draws down, these people, these strongmen, will be able to consolidate their power even more, and it'll be very difficult for anyone to challenge them.
Why is it happening?
I think it really does relate to the fact that there hasn't really been a system of governance that reach all parts of the country. In many places, there's no court, there's no prosecutor, there's no judge. In some parts of the country, the police are afraid to go, or there aren't enough police to have anyone there. So it's really a power vacuum which has been filled by men who have soldiers and guns of their own.
Back in Tahar province, I've been approached by another old gentleman with a tale of abuse. از کجا؟
آدمی بارک جلب داده که دکماندنی باید.
He's showing me his documents. These are very old documents. And does it say that that land belongs to him?
This old man has spent the last 30 years trying to claim his land back from powerful commanders. He's frail, and his hands and head shake all the time. He tells me once he had 8 hectares, but they were stolen from him by a local commander. The documents he's showing me seem to prove that this land is his. But he says the son of the commander who originally stole it is now growing his own crops on this land. The old man tells me that a few months ago he went to the commander directly to complain about the situation, and he was beaten up. Now he is alone, because his son had to flee to Iran when the commander started threatening him. But as I say, the documents seem to show that the land belongs to this old man.
He says, although independent directorate of local governance of Tahar wrote to him and they acknowledged the fact that the land belongs to him, he still doesn't get it back because he doesn't have money to bribe officials. He says, if you don't have money, you just lose. The problem here, judge, so officials' decisions doesn't mean anything. He says he went to meet many officials in Kabul, including President Karzai, but he still can't get his land back.
It's hard to see much changing for old men like this. I was in this remote border province of Afghanistan 7 years ago, and many people around here are still troubled by the same lack of security, the same lack of law and order. The biggest difference I have noticed is that they have asphalted the road to Talokand. But even there, you have to be careful because of all the armed gangs. In the region, it's still controlled by the former Mujahideen, the warlords, who have power and weapons. I've seen very little evidence that these people are prepared to give up their weapons. So it seems likely that the ordinary people of Afghanistan, the farmers or the shopkeepers, will continue to be at the mercy of the men with guns.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.